Welcome to Real Estate Coaching Radio, starring award-winning real estate coaches and number one international best-selling authors, Tim and Julie Harris. Real Estate Coaching Radio is the nation's number one daily radio show for realtors who demand authentic, real-time coaching. Get ready for fluff-free, unfiltered, full-strength honesty about what's truly working to get you into action, helping others, and making money now in today's real estate market. Now to our hosts, Tim and Julie Harris.
We're joined today by Jeff Sislow, a top producing real estate broker and investor serving the Minneapolis real estate market. Jeff has specialized in effectively working with buyers, sellers, and investors for over 30 years. He listens, responds, represents, and performs in the best interests of his clients. His focus is on efficiency, effectiveness, and excellence. As a result, he outperforms the industry in a variety of categories. Jeff is a worldwide traveler, has been the guest speaker and presenter at events across the country, and is a seasoned author who's published two books. He also enjoys tennis, golf, and staying physically active. Now, let's welcome Jeff to the call as we join our host, Tim Harris.
So, Mr. Sislow, first of all, I want to thank you sincerely for being my co-host for today's podcast. Julie and I have known Jeff for probably at least two decades. Julie and I originally discovered or befriended Jeff way back in the Howard Brinton days, and I remember listening to Jeff's Howard Brinton interview and wanting to meet him because he had such a fantastic story. And I don't know how often you talk about how you got started in real estate, Jeff, but I think a lot of our podcast listeners will appreciate the fact that, you know, you have earned it. You've done it yourself. You've, you know, brought yourself up. You haven't had any sort of shortcuts to your success. So it'd be great if we could talk about that. And the thing that most impresses me about Jeff is the fact that he is one of these folks in the industry that, in my opinion and Julie's opinion, are the true backbone of the industry. He's somebody who has been in this industry through about every real estate cycle you can imagine. He's sold in a normal market, normal price ranges, and he has made a career out of real estate. He's not a hobbyist. He's not looking for gimmicks. He's a drilled down focused person. That's how I always remember him. I know that's how he is today. So Jeff, thank you very much for being my co-host for today's Real Estate Coaching Radio.
Tim, it's great to connect. It's been a while. I'm honored to be a guest on your show. I'm excited to have learned a little bit about your success and your coaching. So congrats to you on that. And again, it's a pleasure to be here today.
I'm just riding on my wife's coattails as always, Jeff. You might remember that. So
yes, I do.
Like all of us. So what do you mind sharing with them a little bit of your pre-real estate background? Because that was one of the things that really I thought was most impressive.
Sure. I guess where I would give a lot of the credit to my success in real estate would come from the Marine Corps. I spent 4 years in the U.S. Marines right after high school. And while I was in the Marine Corps, I was working in the computer field. I got a good position. I wasn't out there having to shoot people or anything like that. But I got really good disciplined training in boot camp. And I like that. I do like the structure. And it certainly challenged me and formed and shaped me more as an individual. I was always kind of competitive and an entrepreneur mind. Even, you know, in junior high school, I was trading stocks in the hallway, right? trading options, in fact, on the old touch-tone phones, getting in trouble. Well, why aren't you in class? Well, I'm doing some stock trades. And they look at me like, are you crazy, kid? So anyway, I had all that kind of in me, but the Marine Corps really helped dial in the discipline. If I want to get success in something, I really need to apply myself and follow through and do what you say you're going to do. So they drilled that into me pretty well. And then after that, I spent another seven years in the world of IT. I was doing mostly hardware. I was writing operational manuals for systems and procedures for installations that we worked at back in Control Data back in the day. In the last year and a half, we were working in IT with program trading for Wall Street, the institutional buy and sell, the order execution. So here I am again, back in the world of stocks and so forth. But I said to myself, you know, there's got to be something more than what I'm doing. I mean, I was making $25,000, $26,000 a year. And I said to myself, Jeff, you're not on the right elevator. You're not on the right elevator. There's another elevator somewhere that goes higher than $26,000 a year. And so I came to the conclusion that real estate was that elevator. And in the very first year, back when prices were like $80,000, I sold 58 houses and I earned $75,000. So I'm on a new elevator all of a sudden. And it was really exciting. And I really started to grasp real estate. And after that first year, I moved from Coldwell over to RE/MAX Results. RE/MAX Results is the number one RE/MAX in the world right now and has been for a number of years. I've been with the same brokerage for nearly 31 years now. It's a great place, and I've had all kinds of fun in real estate, but that's the beginning. That's how I got started, through some discipline and some planning and executing and following through.
I know you do a lot of mentoring. I mean, you'd have to after being in the business for three decades of new agents. They all must sort of be looking for the secret sauce. They must be looking for some kind of, you know, I'll stick with the word secret. You don't have a secret other than what we like to say, doing what you don't want to do when you don't want to do it at the highest level. But for you, that's become second nature. How do you convey to people who are looking for shortcuts that there is no shortcut?
Well, you tell them, number one, because you get asked that question all the time. Yeah, I mean, what is the secret to your success? And I kind of alluded to it. I'll repeat it. The secret to the success is to have some type of a plan and then follow through with it. Now, some people say, well, let's go with a Stephen Covey approach. Focus on the end rather than the means. And then another person will say, you need to map it out. You need to have how many calls and how many appointments and how many listings to get so many sales and map that out and follow that on a regular basis of prospecting. Both of those are true. Both of them will work. But the important thing is you need to do something and then do it on a regular basis. So if you're focusing on the end rather than the means, you need to get into the office and you need to do some very specific things on a regular basis, knowing that in the end, I'm going to get here. And you focus on that with an expectation, but you also have to follow it up with action. If you don't do a regular job of applying your energies and your activities during the day, you have to do that on a regular basis. And it's so easy. What I find myself, I'm challenged with it myself today, in today's world, it's so easy to get distracted. So if you are aware of that, I'm distracted all the time. If someone can admit that to themselves and then cut those things out and focus on the dollar productive activities, they will find that's the secret to making more money in real estate today.
How do you say no to all the gimmicks? Because, you know, I was thinking whether or not I should tell the story, but I think you'll appreciate it, Jeff. This might just be for Jeff and I. I remember back at Howard Britton. I remember back at a Howard Britton event. I remember when Howard used to have all the stars and anybody else bring all their, you know, collateral, their marketing, their ego stuff. And they'd all put it on these tables in the back room. I'm sure you remember that. And all of us had these
Correct.
Little displays because we all convinced ourselves that somehow we'd get referrals from it. And sometimes you did. Mostly it was just for the sake of people oohing and awing your marketing. But I remember looking at this big table. This is when we were relatively new in the Howard Britton group. And I remember looking at this big table of all this stuff, all these ideas. And most of it was brilliant. And I remember Jim Duvall, which I'm sure you remember him, walked up, and I remember him just looking at all the tables, Jeff, and he goes, this is all he said. You know, he loved to hit people, these zingers, and walk away. He said, you can always tell when the housing market's doing good. Agents love to waste their money. And he just walked away.
Sounds like Jim. Yep.
Totally right. So how do you've seen all these gimmicks come and go. In three decades, you've seen everything from, I mean, I don't even have to tell you. How do you know how to discern the good things to chase or the bad things? Or do you just say, I'm going to stick to my true north, what I know works, and I'm going to avoid the temptation of the gimmicks? Do you understand the nature of the question?
I certainly do. Here's what I used to do years ago, because this isn't anything new. There's just more of it today. But I used to, with my staff, I'd say, look, if anything is going to cost me more than $500, and that's the number that I happen to pick, and maybe someone liking this idea might pick their own number, but if it's going to cost me more than $500, I want to sit and mull it over and certainly find out if there's other people that have made money by investing in this gimmick. And there's all kinds of online stuff. There's all kinds of social media gurus right now that you know, I'm tired of listening to it. And most of the time, I haven't really received the return that I'm looking for. So you can set a limit. You need some references, you know, talk to people. It's hard because they're all there and we think it's going to make us more money. What I really come to learn is if you want to make the most money in real estate, you need to keep talking to people face to face as much as possible, but be on the phone, prospecting, talking to people, asking for referrals constantly. Do that all the time. You should do it at least 2 hours a day. Most agents, and I would say most, I'm gonna venture a guess, 95% would be my guess of agents do not prospect for even an hour a day, let alone 2 hours a day. If they did, they would make money. When I got started in the business, when I really started to see my business grow from 58 sales and, you know, up and over 100 and then up to 150, you know, it just kept going up to over a couple hundred at a time. And I didn't have a big team. No, I was just talking to people all the time. My goal was to make 100 phone calls a day. That's going to make you way more money than writing checks to the various online gurus of the day. There's many of them. I won't mention by name, but there's many of them out there. So, you know, I know people that have spent $20,000 a month. Oh, we're making a lot of money on the leads. And, you know, maybe they are, but that's a big nut to crack. 20 grand a month in online expenses to have my name popping up on people's computer. You know, I could spend just a couple hours a day calling and talking and networking to people and following up on leads. But my goal was 100 and I hit it often, but I normally was calling 75 to 100 people a day. Some were expireds. There's not many in this market. Some were for sale by owners. There's a few of them in this market because it's easy to sell a house right now. But I would call apartments. Have you ever given any thought of stepping out of the apartment and into a new house? Well, I thought about it, but I don't think I have enough money. Well, may I ask, how much money do you have down? Well, I got about $10,000. I said, well, if I could get you into a house with $10,000 and reduce your monthly payment from what you're paying in rent, would you be interested in making a move? And you know what? They'd say yes. So you have to have a dialogue. You have to have a script. You have to have a system, and you continually make the calls on a regular basis. You'll make so much money. That's how I built my business, by calling people and talking to them.
Totally. And, you know, here's the thing that's interesting. I do not know of a single, well, so there's lots of agents, you said it, that are pushing a lot of numbers, but they aren't making a lot of profit. We've had them on these interviews on our podcast before, and we've had them as coaching clients, and they don't feel the pain until the economy starts to shift. But there's so, Jeff, the mindset has been that if you're like the margins that agents are willing to accept from their teams is now around 10% before taxes. And I remember back in the Howard days, we always used to focus on the conversation about being the margins being about 50%. But now as agents have spun up their buyer's agent staff and they're buying leads from all these different lead sources, they don't realize they're not making any money. And everywhere they turn, everyone they talk to, they're all suffering the same fate as far as no profit in their business. And it's almost like the industry is asleep to the fact that selling real estate really is probably one of the best things you could do for a living, but only if you're running a profitable real estate practice, which so few people are illuminated to anymore. It's almost like it's like doing the real work, like what we're talking about on this podcast. It's almost become something that people don't even want to consider because they're so addicted to the gimmicks. Have you noticed a real change in agents and brokers and in everything, the industry's mindset towards real work? Have you noticed a change like I have in the past 10 years?
Elaborate on the word real work so I can best answer.
Prospecting.
Oh,
being,
yeah.
Having
yeah,
a business.
Yeah, no, exactly. They're trying to go the easy route. Absolutely. Yes. They are trying to buy the leads. They're trying to buy the business. And then on the other part of your initial comment, Tim, was that we're seeing these crazy splits. So the profit to the rainmaker or the team lead, right? The profit for their company or their business, the margin is so small. I've seen it shrinking. And then when you couple it with the fact that there's more agents than there are listings out there, the agents that are trying to survive, guess what they do with their commission? They really negotiate on it, you know? And so that shrinks the margin even further. So the team leads are getting smaller pieces of smaller pieces. I'll tell you, it's going to be very interesting to see how many of them continue to survive. But they're, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not putting agents down because we've all been there and kind of done it to some degree. But, you know, there's a thing called ego that can get in our way, and it has a way of getting into our pocketbook and kind of taking money out of it. So the Hip National Bank no longer has cash in it. It's becoming, you know, a sinkhole. And where's my money, right? Where did it all go? I thought I made $1 million or $1.5 million. You know, gosh darn it, I owe a bunch of taxes and I don't have any money to pay for it. We've seen this. We've seen it happen to people before. It happened to me once. Happened to me once back in 1989 when I came to do my taxes. I made a mistake, but I only made the mistake once. I learned to do things differently. But people do that. They unfortunately fall into a problem of not having any money at the end of the day. At the end of the month, they're short. They're in the red.
What scares me about this, and then I have another great question. Hopefully it's a great question. But what scares me about this is there's so many people that are listening, 100 and, I don't know, probably 26,000 will listen to this show, that have only known the industry in the past 10 years and the, you know, buying buyer lead sort of thing, the big spin up of the team, the buying buyer, basically buying leads, you know, building big teams and having really, really low profit margins, not even knowing you have a unhealthy profit margin, but, you know, because you're doing what everyone else is doing, you're going to conferences and it's reinforcing the bad business decisions, the whole thing. So you just don't know any better. What scares me is there's a whole generation of people that literally have never been told that there's a better, more profitable way to do the business. So, you know, listeners, it's up to you to basically decide what path you're going to choose, but don't do what most people, most agents do. Wait for the economy to change and then realize basically you made some bad decisions. Jeff and I aren't going to turn this call dark, but he and I know a lot of people who have literally met the ends of their lives because they couldn't handle a shifting market because of their overheads, because of their personal wealth situation changed. That happens every time. I'm not predicting. I don't know if Jeff might be just very smart. He might know way more about this than I do. He probably does. I'm not predicting any kind of big recession or any sort of blow up in the economy anytime soon. But for all the top producers out there listening, you better be listening to what Mr. Sizzlo is talking about here. Because at the end of the day, you're in business to make a profit. And that's something I always remember about Jeff. Jeff at these Howard Brenton events, he wouldn't be one of these big ego agents that's, you know, walking around with his chest, you know, puffed up and, you know, that type of thing wasn't Sizzlo. Sizzlo was somebody I always knew when I went to talk to him, he wasn't going to bullshit me and the conversation was going to steer back to profit. So let's talk about that. What have you done over your career? Like what have been the North Stars for you? Because I know you're big into investing now. I'd like to talk about that a little bit. How long you've been doing it? Give these agents some, you know, light at the end of the tunnel as far as what they should be maybe gearing their businesses towards with investing.
Okay. Let's go back to pre-big crash, like 12 years ago or so when the market started to head south. I was caught up in all the frenzy. It's easy to get caught up in the frenzy. So there's a little frenzy going on right now. So my antenna's up because I got caught in it before and I lost millions of dollars because I had a lot of property. And I was buying property in Florida. Had like 16 of them down there. I had a bunch of rentals up here. These are all rentals. I just kept buying, making lots of money in commissions, you know, fat, you know, commission dollars, big dollars, right? And I'm just buying houses, thinking that the profit was going to go up. I was making six figures a month in appreciation on my real estate holdings. I'm thinking, this is great. I love this. And I had a negative $12,000 a month cash flow at the time. I said, that's no big deal because I'm making so much money, right? Frenzy. We're getting a little frenzy right now. So what happened? The market started to go down and I got caught owning all these properties, paying 12 grand a month. The sales were slowing down and that could happen again to some degree. We don't have crazy lending like we did back 12 years ago, 15 years ago, but we have some kind of craziness going on a little bit. So keep your antenna up and be, you know, cover yourself just in case. Be a little bit more conservative and not so, you know, crazed like I was back then. So the market went down. I ended up, you know, it took 3.5 years to what I call deleverage the holdings of these properties. I had a couple of short sales, had a couple of foreclosures, lost a boatload of money, you know, 85% of our net worth. Then had a 2-year divorce. We paid $250,000 to the lawyers and, you know, oh my gosh, you know, and then we split that, what we had left. And so that was part of my investing background, but now let's talk about what I've done in the last 6 years since the divorce. I get back into it because what do? I know real estate. I know real estate, so I'm going to do what I know best. So in addition to, you know, the selling, representing buyers and sellers and investors and getting paid commissions, I started to function by building my wealth back up again. And I did it through IRAs. I did it through Roths. I, of course, have LLCs that I own properties in. And I have found over the last now 5 years that I'm going to do these fix and flips. I came to realize that if I buy a house, I'm in the business, I should see deals. If I buy something that I can turn around and make a profit on, this does a couple things. One, the profit margin on one of these, and it takes experience, it takes time. So if the listeners are just new to this, I'm just giving you kind of the summary of where I'm at with this and why I'm so excited about it. And it's a supplement. Now it's more prominent as far as my income goes, my profit goes, it's greater than my commissions. But my average is a little over 50, about $51,000 per house. Well, if I want a profit based on our average sale price in the Minneapolis area, my average sale price after expenses of, you know, advertising, marketing, paying staff and so forth, it's about 8 or 9 sales transactions where I represent a client. 8 or 9 of those will equal one of my flip projects. So I said, why don't I do more flips? So if I'm doing, you know, 5 flips, it's like 40 or 45 house sales. Oh, that's pretty good. And I don't spend nearly as much time. The profit is equal. So now I'm trying to do one of these a month. My goal and where I've been kind of moving and growing this fix and flip is about one a month. Well, that's not bad. If I'm doing 50, that's 600 grand profit a year. That's not bad. I mean, I can certainly live on that because I don't have any expenses. Because it's a planning thing. It's a whole thing. Know your numbers. It's a planning thing. So not to boast about those numbers. There's people that have greater numbers than me, do way better than that. But it's something that I think everyone in real estate should plan on. Get yourself a Roth. Get yourself a Roth IRA. Learn how to do a self-directed Roth IRA so that all your flips are now tax-free. Isn't that amazing? That's unbelievable. There's so few people that I know in the business that even invest, let alone have an IRA or even a Roth. That's how you build wealth. So there's just some nuggets there to consider because we're not necessarily talking about how to do all this, but mark my words, that is the most amazing. It's kind of like the 8th wonder or 9th wonder, whatever of the world, is build your wealth in a Roth. It's unbelievable, and do it through real estate.
So is there any limit how much you can, well, Jeff, let's hover there. Is there any limit to how much you can put into a Roth? Because as a normal, yeah, you're talking about putting your profits from, but the explain that. Just drill down a little bit because they're going to email you asking you if you don't tell them.
Yes, okay. You can put 5,500. I'm pretty sure these are the numbers. If you're under 50 years or 55 years old, you can put $5,500 a year in the Roth. I think it's 55 years old. If you're over 55 years old, you can put $6,500 a year in a Roth. Well, that doesn't do a whole lot, but what you can do as self-employed people, you can put 25% of your adjusted gross income, I believe. I'm not the accountant, and I'm going to hold my disclaimer out there. I'm not giving advice, right? All right, so 25% of your income can go into a regular Roth. So let's just pick a number. Let's say you have $100,000 adjusted gross, and you can put 25% into a regular IRA, not the Roth, a regular IRA. Now you're going to pay taxes on $75,000, very simplified, right? So you're getting the deduction for the investment into your retirement accounts. So the $25,000 is not in a Roth. It's in a regular IRA or a 401k, right?
Oh, that's where I was confused. Yeah, that's where I was confused.
Now you convert it. So you take – right. Go ahead, Tim.
Well, no. I knew the limit was 55. Right. Yeah. So you're –
directly
you're,
into
but
the
you
Roth, 55 or 65. But now you can put it into your non-Roth IRA. And in this scenario, you earn 100, you can put 25% in, so you put 25,000 into your regular IRA, then you convert it into the Roth, which means now you're going to pay taxes on it. You first got the deduction over here by not having to pay taxes on the 25,000, but now you're going to pay taxes on the 25,000 because you're moving it from the regular into the Roth. With me?
Got it.
On that?
Yes.
Now, yep. Guess what? Now in 1 year, you now have a little over 30,000 or a little over 31,000 in your Roth. Okay. You can't borrow money. You cannot borrow money from a bank unless it's to buy real estate, unless it's a non-recourse loan. If you're doing this, with your IRA. And no one's going to really do those. That means, well, if you default, that we can't take the property back. No one's really going to loan money that way unless it's a hard money lender. They might, but then the interest rate's super high. So you want to continue to build the Roth as much as possible. If you partner with someone else that has a Roth, or some type of investment, you can be a part owner in a flip project. For example, let's say in this case, now we got $30,000 in our Roth in 1 year, right? We got $30,000 there. Someone's going to go ahead and buy a $300,000 property for cash, and they like you, or you like them, or you want to help them a little bit. They're going to put up $270,000, and you, with your $30,000 in your Roth, are going to put that in because they're going to let you do it. They probably don't need you to do it, but you find someone that's going to partner with you. You now have $30,000 into this flip project. If that makes 50 grand on the flip, right? You have 10% ownership in this property because you put 30,000 down on the 300. You get 10% back on the 50,000 profit. Okay, you get 5,000 bucks. You put in 30, you get back 5 in maybe 4 months. Not a bad investment, huh? That's how you get started with this stuff, until you can do it on your own and you have enough money to buy your own properties. And maybe if you've got someone that's on your team, you let them, you help them grow their wealth. You let them and show them how to build their Roth, get started, give them a little piece of your action. Talk about retention. Talk about people staying on your team. You're helping them build wealth. They can't do it without you. That's what you do to build wealth and loyalty with the team.
So, guys, that's how a business person thinks, if you're curious. he's not thinking about his logo, or he's not worrying about his branding. He's worried about wealth building. That's what he's focused on. That's what happens. You can have thoughts like this and take actions like what Mr. Sislow does when you have profit from your real estate practice. So, Jeff, we've got some questions that came in that we've actually covered a lot of these, but I think some of these are good. We're going to maybe replay here a little bit. What are your primary lead generators? We always get that question. I had it in probably 6 or 7 different formats here while we were on the show. What are your primary lead generators? You know what? Let me reframe that, Jeff, because that might be interesting. What were they like 30 years ago, you know, 25 years ago? What are they now? Primary lead generators.
Okay. In the past, I did a lot of newspapers. I did press releases written in the third person. I wrote them, but they were written as if Remax wrote them. I did hundreds of these in the newspaper. People would say, you're in the newspaper all the time. That was a really good lead generation. Written by the third party, it legitimizes my successes, and I was always saying something, you know, he was topping the whatever this month. That was really, really big. Well, we don't do much newspaper anymore, okay? Now it's pretty much all online. So because of the saturation of online and the expense involved in getting, you know, lost in the shuffle, I cut it all out. I personally, my prospecting now is I'm looking for deals to buy houses. I have the capacity to buy a number of them at one time and get projects going. So that's a whole nother discussion, but I'll give you one thing that I found in this market because it's so tight. This is a one pearl. If you're looking to invest property, I mean, I'm willing to buy a house at a little bit less than an average, you know, whatever the price is, tweak it a little bit and sell it again, because the market's kind of crazy. That's where we talked about the insanity of a little craze in the market right now. That's kind of it. Don't go overboard with this. I'm being a little cautious, but in the last, 7 or 8 weeks, I bought 2 houses before they went on the MLS. I go to Facebook, I look at the posts, I see who's got something coming on the market. And I say, you know what? I see if it's a good value. I can kind of see if it seems like it might be a good deal. I will go ahead and after I conclude that it is, I'll get a hold of the agent and I says, you know, does your seller have any interest at all in potentially selling their house without showing it? No mortgage, no appraisals, maybe not even an inspection. Just let me know when they want the check. Do they have any interest in that? Well, guess what? They're going to go ask the seller. And I bought 2 of them that way in the last seven weeks or so. I can get something. One was going to go on at 300. I got it for 271. Plus I'm getting paid the commission. Another one was going to go on at 235. I got it for 225, but I think it might be a little underpriced. So I thought, you know, I'm going to be kind of closer to that one, but I'm going to make 50 on maybe on one of them, but I'm going to make way more than a commission. So again, building wealth through being in a position to buy like that in a market that's tight, controlling inventory. If I have the house, if I own the house, guess what? I got a for sale sign out there. I can put some ads. I can get some buyers. I could even do an open house or have someone do an open house, get buyer leads. Inventory is key. So if I don't have a lot of inventory because people aren't calling me because I'm not prospecting as much for inventory any longer, I'm going to create my own inventory because of the wealth building principles that I've got in place that I've built over years. It gives me more arrows in my quiver. I have more tools that I can use to create money in the world of real estate.
Income generating.
So there's two examples, one of the past and one of the current. So.
Yeah. So income generating spokes is what he's describing. And listeners, the gist of it is that when he started out in the business, he was doing proactive lead generation. He was prospecting. And then as his business and his cash flow and his wealth accumulated, he was able to create his own inventory. That's a natural transition that a lot of top producing agents take. And so that might be something else you can consider. Alan Dom, I should try to get him on the podcast. He was another example of somebody who started out and he prospects and he prospects like a fiend, but he got to the point where listeners, he dominated so much of his market. He stopped putting his stuff in the MLS. He did this starting back, I think in the 90s, he just stopped putting his stuff in the MLS because he had such a dominant market share in these downtown Philadelphia high rises. But he said, look, if you want to see any of the inventory I have for sale, you got to come to my office co-ops. And that just created more opportunity for him to list more properties. All right. So here's another good question. I think that I'm curious how you're going to answer this one myself. Do you get bored and how do you fight against being bored? Because there's so much repetitious boredom in real estate. How do you answer that question?
That's a good question, and I would imagine that it has a lot to do with, you know, work ethic, how someone was raised. I mean, we're all a byproduct of all of our past experiences. So, you know, how is a person raised, and can someone, you know, pry themselves out of the framework and make a change? And yes, you know, there's books on that. How do you become a better, more successful person? I mean, some bad habits need to get rid of it. You know, it's hard to answer that. Subjectively, but objectively, in my case, I've always got something to do. And a lot of times I get frustrated doing stuff that I don't want to do, but it has to get done. So I get it done. So I spend a lot of time in the office, but I'm working on the numbers. I'm working on the projects. I'm working on the systems. And if you've got help, which I think we all need help, we all need some kind of help, right? But if we have help in the office, someone that's capable, that's smart, that can figure things out, that can take things off your plate. That's part of your business. That's part. And when you have that, we haven't talked for a while, Tim, but I travel, you know, my average is probably every 45 to 60 days, I'm gone somewhere really fun, like out of the country. And I'm enjoying that. So that kind of fuels my market, or, you know, my thinking, I should say, it fuels my market up in my head, but no, it fuels the excitement to be able to go somewhere again. If my business is going well and things are, you know, I've got projects, I've got houses, I've got two pendings waiting to close. So I got projects ahead of me on those. And I've got one ready to go back in the market here as soon as Minnesota warms up. It's the coldest April on record, I think, right now, with more snow and cold. But I have to do some exterior work in the house. Can't do it till it's warmer. So I'm sitting on the house waiting. But I have projects. And then kind of in between those, I can jump on a plane or jump on a cruise ship. My son and I just celebrated his 21st birthday. Gosh, this is fun. I'm really enjoying it. So I don't get bored. I mean, I don't get bored because I created a lifestyle that I love. And people, you know, I mean, I'm not trying to boast about it. It's something that I worked long and hard to do. People say, oh my gosh, look at you. You're on another vacation. I can't believe it. You know, you're so lucky. Well, no, it's not really about luck. As we all know, everyone knows that's not luck. It's a plan, and it's discipline from the Marine Corps days. It's just writing things down. What do you want to do? I don't have all the answers, guys. Believe me, I don't. I'm learning as I go, but I like what I'm doing right now. It's really fun. I've got pictures in my office. I'm walking in my office now. I got pictures with my kids, you know, the Colosseum, the Blue Mosque in Turkey, the Parthenon, Santorini Island, Ephesus, Mount Fuji, my daughter and I climbed, Wimbledon, my son and I went to tennis, the Taj Mahal. My son and I are taking a flight simulator to fly the space shuttle. These are all trips I've taken my kids on because I had a plan. You guys can do the same thing. I'm not here to boast about what I'm telling you. You can do it. You need a plan. You need to write some stuff down, what's important to you, and then just start taking the steps to do it. And it's, for me, not boring at all. It's not boring. I'm living the dream. It's really, really fun. On paper, I'm living the dream. And overall, I'm pretty happy inside. I mean, I have problems like anybody else. You know, Tim, I think you know, I was, you know, 16, 17 years ago, I was supposed to die with an incurable disease. I mean, I don't always have a good day, you know. God miraculously healed me. I'm perfectly healthy.
I remember
healthy.
That.
Those are one of my books that I wrote about. But the thing is that we all face stuff in life. We all have challenges. How do we respond to it defines who we are.
So listeners, what you're hearing is the voice of a man who has, for 30 years, done what he didn't want to do, when he didn't want to do it, at the highest level, and he's reaping the benefits from it. He has been, you know, as in typical Midwestern style, it's probably the reason that we've always been friends, you know, we don't bullshit. He's telling you that it was not easy. He was telling you that he doesn't have any special, you know, he wasn't being, guys, did you hear what he said? It's about doing what you don't want to do when you don't want to do it. And you have to do it for a long time. Everything that's worth having in life always seems to take about, I don't know, 50 to 100% longer than you think it would have. Maybe even 300% longer than you would have. But if you stick with it, you're going to win. So I had a question that just came up. You mentioned this earlier. This is something we talk about a lot on our podcast, a lot in our coaching program. As a matter of fact, a book that it's not our book, but I'll suggest, Jeff, yeah, I know you know about this book, Ego is the Enemy, Ryan Halliday. And remember, listeners, he's going to be speaking at our event in July. He is the afternoon speaker on that Saturday. And you guys can go to harrisvipmastermind.com. One of the, you know, it's a New York Times bestselling book, but a fantastic book all about ego. Ego is the enemy. So Ryan, if you're listening, there's another free plug for you. You're welcome. So Jeff, how do you mentioned ego earlier, and that's something that nobody talks about. Certainly, I mean, that's very, very rarely a word that comes out of the mouths of a top producer. So you're aware of it. How has the ego, how have you kept your ego in check so you could keep focused for the most part on your personal North Stars?
Well, I'm a faith-based guy, right? So there's a passage, it's in Proverbs somewhere, and it says, pride comes before a fall, okay? I can go back, and there's times in my life where my ego was really big, okay? The first year in the business, I was rookie of the year. I sold more houses than any first-year agent. The second full year that I was in the business, or the first full year that I was with RE/MAX, I was a top guy in Minnesota and Wisconsin. We had a region, you know, North Central region. And my ego was kind of getting really big. I mean, look at me. You know, I'm on the right elevator now, right? I'm on the right elevator. And then I mentioned something about taxes earlier in this call. I woke up on I always used to do my taxes myself. Back on January 1 was my day to do my taxes. January 1, 1989, I had this great year in 1988. And I did my taxes and I found that I owed $40,000 and I didn't have the money. I kind of freaked out. And I took out a home equity line to pay the IRS and I had to pay the money back. And that's when I really started to focus, you know. But the problem that I look back, I was so full of myself back then, right? So full of myself. And it's happened more than once in my life. That was in real estate. Once I was doing stock options. I lost six figures in one day doing stock options because I was so freaking good. I was so, and you know, the way I see it, it's like God is teaching me, don't be like that. You don't need to be like that. I'm going to take care of you and everything. But that's how I processed it in my mind. And if I'm at church, I might be giving a talk. And I talk about this, pride comes before a fall. Those two times in real estate, I was super pumped up. Look how great I am. And boom, I just got leveled. And then the same thing happened with stock trading. And I can go into the details, but trust me, I was just making, I turned $100,000 into $400,000 in like 4 months. And I'm just, I'm going to get an SEC license. I'm all pumped up. And I get the little voice inside that says, stop doing this. I said, No, I'm good at this. I'm really good at this. The 400 grand went to nothing. It took four more months. So I learned from those things. It doesn't, you know, it's good to feel good about yourself, but there's a difference between confidence, which we all need, and arrogance, which is the ego part. You got to know where that line is. You want to be confident so people see that in you. You're a leader, displaying confidence. People hire you when they see the confidence, but they don't want anything to do with you when they start to see the arrogance. Know where that line is.
So you, that's an interesting way to think of it. So you're saying that you know that the ego is becoming toxic when you are feeling it or when you see it in other people where it's become arrogance. That's kind of an interesting flip side. I like how concise that is, Jeff. That's good. Because it is true. You know, a lot of people, the ego has a has some sort of purpose, I suppose, which I'm not really, I've never heard anyone really completely describe what it is. But it does have
people.
Some benefit.
Sure.
Yeah. It does. But then where's the tipping point? Where does it actually become where it becomes a wealth destroyer? And that's something, Jeff, I think it's interesting when you think about all the people you and I have known who've been absolute private jet flying, you know, diamond encrusted gold Rolex wearing, you know, all these people, same as we do. You
yes.
I'm sure know more. And where are they now? And what happened? Why did they go from where they were to where they are now? What actually happened? And if you here's the thing, listeners. It's not a mystery because things like this have been happening for all of history. People have this tendency not to learn from their own experiences. Jeff described in, you know, very, I think, explicit ways, three different ways that he basically had fallen prey to his ego. And all of us have stories like that. But here's the thing, listeners, there's an old Chinese proverb says, smart man learns from his mistakes, a brilliant man learns from the mistakes of others. You need to be thinking about that and try to learn from people like Jeff who are so willing to contribute to you. And I have to say, Jeff, you are the same quality gentleman that I remember you as being back when Julie and I got in the business. Always been willing to share, never felt a big ego from you. I don't remember you being an ego guy, by the way. I remember you being one of the only guys in the whole Howard Britton camp that wasn't a big ego guy, because the Howard Britton environment did foster ego. I mean, that is basically was the undertone of all those meetings. A lot of wonderful people. But for the most part, that was just, the ego was so thick, it wasn't even funny. That became the currency, is, you know, ego. And Jeff was never mm-hmm. like that. Jeff was always one of these guys that was staying true to basically being in the business to stay profitable. So Jeff, as we round the bend on today's podcast, you obviously have an opportunity and have had an opportunity, you know, over your career to be influential on the next generation of real estate folks. A big general question, but is there anything in particular you'd like to say, something that if you could just grab the industry by the collar and shake it, that you would say to it?
I would encourage everyone to believe in yourself, have the faith in yourself and mirror and match that faith by doing what you say you're going to do. So you have to implement the integrity and continue to learn. This is an industry that always changes. It has so many opportunities. Continue to learn. So, and you can do anything that you determine that you want to do. And it's not going to happen overnight. I'm giving a lot of little thoughts here, but it's not going to happen overnight. But nothing is impossible. Another passage. Nothing is impossible to those who believe. Do you believe you can do it? It's really important. Do you believe that you can achieve what it is that you want? If you're only wondering or you're only wishing or you're only hoping, you know, that's kind of weak. You know, do you believe? And then you can even take it another level. Do you know? Do you absolutely know that if you commit to something, you will achieve it? That is the highest level of confidence that you can have. If you know that you can do it. And it takes practice. It takes time, but you can do it. Don't wish and wonder. Don't hope. Don't keep your fingers crossed and just think. But start to believe and then move up to the highest level of knowing that you know that you know that you know that if you commit to study, if you commit to prospecting, if you commit to laying out a business plan, if you commit to believing in yourself, nothing will be impossible for you. Nothing. You can achieve anything you put your mind to.
Follow one course until successful, guys. Focus. So, Jeff, a lot of folks listening right now, a lot of them are going to connect with you, hopefully send referrals to you. So be gratuitous as you'd like. How can they connect with you? What areas do you serve? What are you know, anything that you can think about how we can pay you back for your time with us today?
No, I appreciate that, Tim, and I appreciate the listeners who took the time to listen to Tim and I, and it's been great to talk to you, Tim. But anyone can reach me. I'm in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, the Twin Cities of Minnesota. We do have spring and summer here. It's beautiful, and the fall is not bad either. But winter is sometimes challenging. But here's how you can reach me. My email is my name, jeff@sislo.com, jeff@sislow.com. And with Remax Results, I think that's probably the best way versus giving out a cell phone. So that doesn't go crazy, but feel free to email me if I can help anyone with your referrals, or if you have any questions, I'd be happy to try to help you. And yeah, that's been a big part of my life and my career. You know, it all started with Howard. I'd like to give Howard Britton, our deceased buddy, he gave us all an opportunity and a platform to be able to give back. He believed in us. He interviewed Tim and Julie. He interviewed me. He interviewed like 280 people, I think. Something like that he handpicked, and he made a big, big difference in our lives to give us that platform and opportunity to share, just like we're doing here today with this audience. So thanks, Tim, again, for allowing me to be a part of your show. Congratulations on your success, and look forward to some more conversation in the not too distant future.
Indeed, Jeff, I promise you we'll stay connected. There won't be another 10-year gap or 15-year gap. we've been busy building
Sounds
a business,
good.
But that's a lame excuse. So, Jeff, listen, I really appreciate it. I meant everything I said. Listen, listeners, you guys, a lot of you are thinking about, what does it sound like? What does it feel like? What can I make real estate a career? Can this be truly the vehicle that's going to allow me to build an incredible life? Yes, the obvious answer. What's the path you stay on? It's your choice as to whether or not you want to make it painful and follow gimmicks and look for shortcuts, or you actually drill down and do as our Marine here said, and do what you don't want to do when you don't want to do it at the highest level, and understand that it'll come, but you have to be worthy of the success. You have to be somebody that has earned it, and there are no shortcuts, guys. I know the world is full of shortcuts. I know that right now, while you're listening to this podcast, you got 47 emails from 47 different companies trying to sell you shortcuts. You just got to say hell no. You just got to realize that they're all just basically, you know what, I'm not saying they're 100% goofy, but they're 99% goofy. So just say no, be willing to do what others aren't willing to do, and you'll have a life that others will never be able to have. We're not bragging, we're not being boastful, we're just being honest. So Mr. Sislo, I really appreciate your time on the podcast today, really appreciate your contribution to the industry, really appreciate the influence you had on Julie and I a couple decades ago. God bless you, and listeners, we'll talk with you on the show tomorrow.
Thanks, Tim.
See you, Jeff.
This program has been a presentation by Tim and Julie Harris, Real Estate Coaching. For more information on our real estate coaching and training programs, visit our website at timandjulieharris.com. Remember to tune in weekdays at noon for upcoming shows, and until next time, thank you for listening to Real Estate Coaching Radio with Tim and Julie Harris.